This is World Have Your Say. A BBC executive is here to answer your questions about the future of the World Service after the UK government announced budget cuts this week. And we'll be in Haiti with the World Have Your Say guest blogger Driss after more than 100 people died following an outbreak of cholera. You can post your questions and your comments now at the blog at worldhaveyoursay.com.
BBC News with Ian Purdon. The French Senate has begun a debate on bitterly contested plans to raise the retirement age from 60 to 62. French trade unions, who've organised protests against the proposals in recent weeks, say the demonstrations will continue even after the Senate vote. The United States is planning to give Pakistan $2 billion in fresh military aid over a five-year period. The new aid is in addition to $7 billion of civilian aid already agreed. The Chinese government has unveiled an online mapping service to rival the one offered by Google. The website Map World allows users to see two- and three-dimensional views from around the globe, including detailed satellite images of China. The judges trying the controversial Dutch politician Geert Wilders are being replaced. His lawyers had argued that the judges had shown bias against a defence witness. Mr. Wilders is charged with inciting hatred against Muslims. The government of Haiti has confirmed that a deadly disease afflicting an area in the north of the country is cholera. It's the first outbreak in Haiti for more than a century. Hospitals have been overwhelmed by people with acute diarrhea, some of them dying within hours. A British nuclear-powered submarine that ran aground off northwest Scotland has been refloated. The submarine had run onto a sandbank. India's tax authorities have given the British mobile phone company Vodafone 30 days to pay a tax bill of more than $2.5 billion relating to the purchase of the Indian telephone assets of the Hong Kong conglomerate Hutchison Whampoa. Vodafone says it'll appeal. The Manchester United striker Wayne Rooney has agreed to stay with the club on a new five-year contract. Rooney threw the football world into turmoil earlier this week when he said he was unhappy at Old Trafford and wanted to leave. The manager, Sir Alex Ferguson, said he was pleased that Rooney had made amends. BBC News.
We've heard the news from the BBC. Now it's our turn. Call country code 44 20 70 83 72 72. Welcome to World Have Your Say.
Hello, I'm Chloe Tilley, and over the past few days we've been inundated with questions about the impact of the cuts to the BBC World Service budget, which was announced by the UK government. So, as promised, a BBC executive is here to take your calls and your questions. David in Adelaide in Australia has posted on our Facebook page, is the BBC looking at other sources of revenue, for example, charging for podcast downloads? Patham tweets, the truth is the world is not free to the extent that it doesn't need as much access to free information. And Mike in Canada has tweeted, I'm digesting the news that the BBC World Service must now be paid out of the licence fee. So who's the boss, the FCO or the BBC?
The blog address is worldhaveyoursay.com.
But before we talk about those impact of those cuts here at the BBC World Service, we're going to return to the conversation we were having just before the news with Giles Mahomi, who is the managing editor of the Ugandan Rolling Stone newspaper. It published the names, photos and addresses of 100 homosexuals in its newspaper with a banner on the front page saying, hang them. And we were also talking to Gug, as we explained before, that's not his real name. He is a gay Ugandan blogger and quite legitimately does not want to be outed or be told, everyone around the world be told his name. So we are agreeing to call him Gug, and I think that's more than reasonable. So we won't go down that road again. But Gug, you were responding to what Giles said just before the news.
Yeah. When it comes to Giles just going ahead and putting our names, putting our photos, and then saying that we are the ones who are doing this dastardly thing of recruiting. And he's doing this in a country like Uganda where people are banned just because somebody cries thief or cries murder or something like that. And people are banned alive. He is actually inciting violence against me. And that's why I was asking him, why does he want to kill me? Why does he want to kill me when I don't know anything about him?
I think on that issue, I explained why I wanted you to be hanged. I said we want an investigation into the homosexuality world. Police should come up and investigate this matter because homosexuality is now spreading like wildfire in Uganda. You are seriously recruiting, and we have evidence that you are recruiting. Witnesses to pin you on that.
You
please, I listen to you.
You did not give any evidence. You just put the photos of people with names in your paper. You didn't give any evidence, not even a shred of evidence, except sources which are anonymous, which want us hanged. Now, if you say that you wanted the police to investigate us, and because we are supposed to be recruiting, then you should have gotten this evidence, taken it to the police, say this is what is happening, and this is what. But you wrote a newspaper and said, these are the people, hang them. That is what you did.
That is what your paper says.
Nothing about the police to investigate.
Let Giles respond.
I've listened to you. Let me ask you one question. Are you a homosexual?
I am gay. Yes.
You're gay. And what other evidence do you have? Don't you see that indeed we have our evidence, since you are already confirming it, that indeed you're gay?
If I'm gay, I should be killed? I should be killed
I'm gay? Okay. Listen
to
me.
Is that what you are saying?
Listen to me. Gays in Uganda, we have evidence. We have witnesses. And I'm going to show this in the coming issue. We want to show the world how we are recruiting our kids into homosexuality. And you know what homosexuality is related with? It's related with diseases. It's related with drug abuse. It's related with reckless sexual behavior. It's related with tears. You know, you are bringing agony to parents. You are causing...
Let me bring some
comments to you, gentlemen, that are coming in, and we're getting lots of people getting in touch with us at World Have Your Say. Piscata on the blog says, I'm absolutely amazed that World Have Your Say gives people like this airtime. What Mahamy is saying would be a criminal offence in most countries, including in the UK. World Have Your Say is just encouraging homophobes by giving them this forum. Silas in Uganda on Facebook says, talk about homosexuals in Africa and they will tear the roof down. Talk about corruption, education, health, peace, ethics and integrity, and everybody forgets how to speak English. And Peter in Zambia on Facebook says, why can't a Ugandan editor publish whatever he wants for his own country? Gentlemen, frustratingly, we're going to have to leave the conversation there because we do have to speak to our BBC executive who is here in the World Have You Say studio to take questions. I'm sorry, everyone listening, for all of the technical problems there. Giles from the Ugandan Rolling Stone magazine did go into our studio in Kampala, which isn't manned, and so there were a few problems there. I apologise for that. Thank you also to Gug, who joined us on the line from Kampala. Well, as I was saying, Craig Oliver joins us in the World Have You Say studio here. He is controller of English at BBC Global News. Many of you got in touch with us on Wednesday when the announcements were made of the cuts to the BBC World Service budget. And we said we'd get someone in to answer your questions. And I think it's only fair to say, Craig, that it's still not a very clear picture at this stage. So we know that you can't be hugely specific. But just give us an idea, if you would, of the sort of level of cuts that the World Service is facing.
Well, what happened earlier in the week was there was a comprehensive spending review by the British government, and we are funded by the Foreign Office at the moment, which give us grant in aid. And as a part of that settlement, they said that they wanted to take 16% cuts in real terms over the next 4 years. Now, the reality of that is that your budget has to go down 16% in that time, but there are other costs that are added to that. So we're expecting almost a quarter in terms of our cuts over the next 4 years.
I have to say, lots of people have been getting in touch. So I'm going to read you just a flavour of these comments, if you would just respond to them. Elvio is Dutch and he's living in France. He's emailed and said, has the BBC ever considered charging a small fee to BBC listeners worldwide? World Have You Say regular Jodie in Virginia has posted on the blog. She says, why must the World Service be funded only by UK citizens? Why can't those of us who wish to contribute money to help support the World Service be provided a means to do so? I consider your foreign language stations to be critical to the greater role that the World Service serves. I no more want to see those cuts than I do the interview.
Well, I'm massively encouraged by hearing people say that. We're not a charity. We are funded in certain ways, and that needs to be maintained. The best thing that people like Jody can do is basically continue to listen to us and tell all her friends and family about it and make sure more people come to the World Service.
Dee is on the line in Fort Myers, also Anita in Ohio, Andrew in Germany. First, let's go to Dee, who's listening on WGCU. Speak to us, Dee. You contacted us via Facebook. What was the point you wanted to put to Craig?
I just wondered if they would consider creating the subscription service, you know, showing the premium programs, you know, major sports, drama on BBC 1, 2, and 3, in order to subsidize the World Service. Lots of us, and my husband including expats with abroad, we gladly pay.
It's a good idea, but the reality is it's a bit more complicated than that. International rights for sports, for example, are incredibly complicated, and you know, paying for rights within the UK itself is an issue, let alone globally. Also, the reality of the BBC in the world is basically we're in a very, very competitive market, and we've thought this through in a lot of detail, and we think the best way at present to offer ourselves is free to people, although they may have to pay, for example, in BBC World News, for example, we were talking about there, or BBC America is often on cable subscription there, but you don't actually pay specifically for the channel.
Dee, thank you for getting
in
touch.
That's true.
Sorry, you wanted to respond. Okay. Go ahead.
I was just going to say we do have BBC America and we do pay extra on our cable for it here, so. But we'd like to see on that BBC America, we would like to see a bit more of the current shows that they are showing in England, if possible.
Well, that's really encouraging, and we will pass that on to them out there on BBC America.
Fantastic. Thanks for getting in touch, Dee. Let's go to Anita in Ohio, who's listening on WCPN. Anita, what's your question to Craig?
I was just wondering, Craig, where you see the future of the BBC World Service, say, in about 5 years. My concern is this is like the first move almost to absorb it into the regular BBC or to possibly do away with it altogether or radically change it.
I think I can see that you might be concerned about that. What this funding arrangement has done is actually give us security for another 6 years. And the World Service is very much recognised in the UK as one of the jewels in the crown of the BBC, and it's very, very protected. We've actually spent the last few weeks going to a number of the party political conferences in the UK. And what's really interesting is right across the spectrum, all the political parties in the UK support the World Service. And there's massive support for it across the world as well because of its independence and impartiality. And I can just guarantee you that as long as there is a BBC, there'll be a World Service and it will be protected within the BBC.
Do you ever think, Craig, there'll be a situation where there's greater pressure on the licence fee? Because UK licence fee payers, many of them don't listen to the World Service. They're watching BBC One or local radio stations. As the years go on, is there a danger that the World Service budget will get squeezed because licence fee payers are saying, well, we're not listening to that, but I'm watching BBC One.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth explaining to your audience what's going on here. At the moment, the World Service is funded by the Foreign Office, and then what's happened in the last week is in the next couple of years, probably by about 2014-15, will then be funded by what's called the licence fee. And everybody in the UK who owns a television set has to pay £145.50 a year for it. And as a result of that, you get a huge amount of content. Now the World Service is being moved from Foreign Office funding into the licence fee. So one of the questions people have is, you know, hold on a minute, you broadcast all around the world, you do a number of language services, I won't necessarily be able to hear that. The English radio that we do actually is available in the UK, and we actually had last year over 1 million people come to us, which is quite unusual because we don't push it in the UK at the moment because it's a global service. And also the reality of a lot of the stuff the BBC does, it already does a Welsh language service, part of the licence fee. It already does a Gaelic service, which is the Scottish languages, as part of the licence fee. So there's a number of things that already happen within the licence fee that people won't necessarily listen to or hear or watch. So the fact that the World Service is being pulled into that, we don't necessarily see that as a problem. And it is worth underlining that people recognise the incredible value of the World Service and the job it does around the world. And so I think it will be protected for a very long time to come.
Let's bring in Andrew, who's on the line from Germany. Welcome to the programme. What's the point you'd like to put to Craig?
It just continues on what we've been talking about, which is, will the BBC see as part of the World Service remit to continue to promote British interests in the future?
The the World Service doesn't promote British interests at the moment. What happens is that the BBC, although World Service, although it is actually funded by the Foreign Office, and that's just about to change to the licence fee, there's editorial and managerial independence here, and that's something that's very jealously guarded within the BBC. And basically, we are not in a situation where the government tells us what to broadcast, and it's very important for people to understand that. One of the whole points of the BBC, its central purpose is that the BBC and people in Britain believe that impartial, independent information, which may even be embarrassing to the British government, is actually broadcast. And that's what the World Service is for. It's about being independent, and it's about being impartial, and it's not about pushing British interests around the world.
I hope that answered your question, Andrew. Thank you for getting in touch. Tarashmi is in India. George is in Trinidad. But Colin has just picked up the phone in Toronto in Canada to get in touch. If you want to do the same, you can call us country code 44 2070 83 72 72. Colin, what's the point you want to make?
I'm a new listener to the BBC in the last 6 months, and will tell you it is a wonderful view of the world, and I would like us to find some creativity in financing the BBC World Service so that those of us around the world listening can participate and continue to enjoy all of the services offered by the World Service.
Well, again, I'd say that's great to hear. I should just make the case that, you know, you're not going to see the World Service disappearing or having a limb chopped off it in the next sort of next few years. What we've thought very, very hard about these savings cuts that we've had to take, and we've very much protecting what we do at the moment, and we're deliberately protecting our news gathering facilities and our ability to make programs around the world as much as possible. So I actually hope, and I'm fairly confident, that as a member of the audience you won't notice a difference. In terms of the funding streams, it's incredibly complicated. Probably we've actually ended up in the best possible place in terms of actually having some kind of funding stream. Yes, we'd like there to be more money, but there's a reality to the situation that's gone on in this country about spending cuts this week.
Oh, absolutely, completely understand that, but you know, find the value, the view of the world that the service offers, quite outside of the UK, is an amazing piece to be bringing to the other parts of the listening audience.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you appreciate that, and I know that that's actually something that's been really touching in the last week, is the amount of stuff that we've seen on, you know, social media, people writing to us, emailing us, and just the amazing support around the world. And that's one of the best things about the last week, is just hearing people like you saying that they support what we do. So thank you.
Lubna has got in touch with us. Many people listening to this programme will know that Lubna is a dear friend of World Have Your Say. She's in Baghdad, and she says, what's the future of the BBC's correspondents reporting from foreign countries? Will there be plans to replace some of them by local reporters? Please leave the news programmes on the BBC World Service, especially World Have Your Say, untouched. You guys have become like a family to us.
What we've done very, very deliberately, and what will happen is, probably I may even be appearing on this programme again in a month when we can be more specific about what we're planning to do. But what I can tell the audience is we're very, very careful to protect our news gathering around the world, and that means our kind of correspondences and offices around the world. What makes the World Service unique is the footprint of its news gathering, and that's massively important. So I can tell Lubna, you know, that that's something we do want to protect, and again, she shouldn't notice that. And the news is absolutely crucial to what we do, and we will protect our footprint as much as possible around the world.
Gerard in Indonesia has posted on Facebook, will the result of the review affect the BBC World Service's balance between impartiality and having its own opinion in the reporting of news?
The World Service has no opinion, and that's something that's absolutely very, very precious to us. The whole point is to give impartial information around the world and basically be able to broadcast impartially around the world. And I think one of the things that you notice as you travel the world is how rare that is and how, you know, incredible that is. There are a lot of state broadcasters now increasingly broadcasting around the world, but they don't necessarily have impartiality at their core. They are very much about trying to push a world view from a specific country or a government view from a specific country. And absolutely, if there's one thing that can come out of this World Have Your Say, it's just underlining the importance of impartiality to the BBC. It's that.
Thank you very much for getting in touch, Colin. Let's bring in George in Trinidad and Tarashmi, who is in India. George, first of all, you've got concerns about the Caribbean service.
Yes, I do. Two quick points. In the last set of budget cuts, we've seen the Caribbean service decline from 5 news magazine programs per week to just one, and from 3 newscasts per week per day to just 2. My concern, can we see a further erosion of the Caribbean service, although it's still early days yet, but I'm very concerned because, believe it or not, the BBC is still our major source of getting news from other Caribbean islands. And the second point, is there any possibility of a commercial interest being served by taking on ads? So instead of just having "we'll have your say," we can have Turkish Airlines, "we'll have your say."
We wouldn't want necessarily Turkish Airlines to be sponsoring World Have Your Say. I can see a number of enthusiastic nods from the team around here about that. The reason for that is that we don't really want to get into a situation where programmes which are news and current affairs are sponsored. In fact, there's quite a number of regulations about news and current affairs in this country about having sponsorship, and we have Ofcom regulations about that, and indeed it's in the BBC guidelines. What has been spoken about is there a possibility at some stage in the future that there are adverts that surround some of the World Service programmes? That's a very, very early idea. It's not something that I'd really want to encourage people to think about at the moment. It's a possibility, but it's if it were to happen, it would be a long way off. What's interesting, though, is that a lot of the stuff that we broadcast goes to rebroadcasters around the world, and actually a lot of stations around the world take World Have Your Say as a programme, and you may not even actually be hearing it on the BBC World Service Network. And that's the same happens with a number of our news, documentaries, current affairs programmes. And what's fascinating about that is often those networks do have ads around them all the time. So it's not necessarily unusual for people to hear BBC content with ads around it.
Oh, yes, and don't forget the Caribbean service. What can we see for the Caribbean service?
And in terms of the Caribbean service, all I would say is that it's massively important to us. We do actually have a controller of languages who's Lillian Landor, and she's not here at the moment, so she's going to be making announcements about the language services within the next month. All I would say is, it's great to hear you saying how important we are to you, and obviously that impacts on our decision-making.
George, thank you very much for getting in touch with us from Trinidad. I'm pleased you answered those points about advertising, because John in Singapore, Peter in Geneva and Rufi in Pakistan had all asked those questions about advertising. Let's go to Rashmi, who is in India. Thank you for your patience. I know you've been on the line a while. What would you like to say to Craig Oliver?
Yeah, I've been listening to the BBC radio since the last 35 years or so. Now, I just want to know that what impact will the recent cut will have on the broadcast and reporting from and on India.
India is massively important to us as a country, and it's growing in terms of potential. One of the things I should say is not just thinking of the World Service as something that's on radio. And one of the things that my job is actually the controller of English content for Global News. So I'm also responsible for World News, which is a television channel, international television channel, and for the content on bbc.com/news. And so one of the things that we're really thinking about is when we think about India is how we spread, not just in terms of radio, but with the internet. And a lot of predictions at the moment about how the internet is really going to explode in India. It's obviously got a very strong foothold, but the potential for the internet there is massive. And that's certainly one of the things that we want to look at, both in English and in Hindi.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for coming on the show, Tarashmi. Very grateful to you. One last question, Craig Oliver, before you go. Adam has emailed, does the change in funding announced this week mean the end of English football commentaries at the weekend?
No, it doesn't. In fact, one of the things that we do know about the Premiership is how massively popular it is around the world, and our reporting of that, if anything, will go up.
And, of course, the Sports World Have Your Say at the weekends as well.
There is indeed a good plug.
Well, we like to put them in. Thank you very much, Craig Oliver, joining us. He is the controller of English at BBC Global News, joining us on Turkish Airways World Have Your Say.
That's never going to happen.
OK, people will be relieved to hear that. Thank you very much, Craig.
Email worldhaveyoursay@bbc.com. The blog address is worldhaveyoursay.com.
Now, we're going to spend the last few minutes of the programme looking at the situation in Haiti. And you'll be aware that in the last few days, at least 140 people have died after an outbreak of cholera. Officials say 1,500 people have been affected. And the fear now is that it could spread to the tent cities in the capital, Port-au-Prince, which, of course, still houses tens of thousands of people who were left homeless by January's earthquake. Doctors and aid workers have been explaining their view of the situation since the outbreak was first detected in the city of St. Mark.
The outbreak of disease has spread rapidly through rural areas of northern Haiti.
When we heard what was happening this morning, we had one of our members meet me at the gates of the city and told me that over 100 people had already died here.
Nosotros no podemos etiquetar. We cannot identify the outbreak. We are just saying it is an infection. This is diarrhea, and everything that causes diarrhea has one thing in common, and that is an infection that may be caused by water or by food.
We have a lot of people. The problem is down in the fifth section in Bokozel, Balague, Lubin, Poirier, and they're forcing everybody to come up here to St. Nicolas. I raced this guy up here and he just died now as I came to the gate and they told him no.
The hospital in St. Mark where I saw, where we were this morning, was absolutely overwhelmed. I mean, it's a fairly small hospital. Of course, they've been having to recuperate following the earthquake just a few months back with supplies, and they were just absolutely inundated with patients today, so facing very difficult scenes.
In conditions of poverty, where there is not sufficient water and sanitation infrastructure, where you cannot separate drinking water from water for other uses, and when there is not sufficient water overall, that creates conditions very favourable to the spread of cholera.
They fear that any of them can catch the disease, because it kills in a matter of hours, 2 hours, 3 hours, you're dead.
Well, that was Joseph Guyler Delver, who is the Reuters correspondent in Haiti. Well, we can speak now to Driss. Regular listeners to World Have Your Say will know that he's a friend of the programme. He also blogs regularly for us. There's been a recent entry on the blog just in the last couple of days, so go there to read that. Now, we first met Driss when we went to Haiti back in March, and we're going to be returning for the presidential elections next month. Driss, thanks for joining us. Now, I know that you're in Port-au-Prince, so you're not in the area that has been affected by this cholera outbreak. But just give us an idea of how bad the situation is there and what you're hearing.
Actually, from what I'm getting in the know, things that are getting like better in the areas where the outbreak of cholera happened. People actually are trying to flee the area. Hospitals are already overcrowded with patients with such cases. And the Ministry of Health this morning advised the people not to, for the areas of the country not to go to Gonaïves or Semak and other areas affected by this outbreak of cholera. You can imagine what sort of feeling people are having now in Haiti, even in Port-au-Prince, where we have so many homeless people like since the earthquake. So it's a culture of fear that is reigning in the country now.
And how are people living? You say they're obviously fearful that this cholera outbreak could come further south, but give us an idea. It's, what, 8-9 months on from the earthquake. How many people are still living in these tented camps, and how are they surviving?
Actually, nothing has really evolved from since that earthquake. If you come to Haiti now, the people are still living in different conditions. They were talking about temporary shelters. They were talking about relocation. But we are still at point zero. Nothing is being done in Haiti right now. As you know, now everything is about elections now in this country. No matter where you go, you build board of candidates, you feel like people are campaigning. But the people are in the same conditions they've been since January the 12th. So now the tents, even the tents they received are worn out now. You see more pregnant women in the camps. So compared to the month of February or January, if you look at the situation, it's almost the same now. And with the same condition, with this outbreak of cholera, you can imagine what sort of catastrophe it can happen in Port-au-Prince and all over this country.
Absolutely. Well, Driss, thank you so much for joining us on the line. Do stay in touch with us. As I say, World Have Your Say is going to be going to Haiti for the presidential elections next month. So we will link up with Driss again and obviously bring you all of the information on that. Thank you for listening today. If you want to suggest a story, suggest a debate that you think we should be talking about, you can go to the blog worldhaveyoursay.com. You can click on suggest a story, post it there. We always read through all of your comments and suggestions. Have a lovely weekend. Nuala will be back with you on Monday. I will speak to you again on Wednesday of next week. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
You can find out more about programmes coming soon on the new Coming Soon section of our website. Just go to bbcworldservice.com and click Coming Soon.
This is the BBC in Beijing.
Reykjavik.
Sofia. Delhi.
Wherever you are, you're with the BBC.